How do you start? That's one of the questions I get a lot and I see a lot on Facebook is how do you start? Something has awakened your idea and your thought, and you want to become vegan now, you want to become vegetarian, you want to change your diet in order to better yourself or to fix an ailment or just to lose weight or just because you feel like it's the better thing to do for yourself. Well, how do you start? That's what I'm always asked. And I have to say that I've had to restart my journey, if you want to look at it like that, several times in the last year due to different reasons. And when the conclusion I came to is you don't worry about how to start. You just make different choices little by little. It doesn't have to be a gigantic shift in who you are. It doesn't have to be a gigantic shift in your diet. It doesn't have to be this traumatic or excitable switch. For example, my family is not on the same level with this diet as I am. My children and my husband, though they are supportive, they do not feel that it is something that they want to do with themselves. They do not want to go back to alkaline veganism, as it does take a little more time to execute it. You have to make your meals yourself. It's very hard to find food when you're going out to eat that is suitable to the goals of the diet. And I respect that because it's not their journey, it's mine that I am concerned about. That said, how did I change? How did I start my journey back into veganism? Little choices. If we went out to a restaurant and they had the choice of some kind of vegetarian option versus the meat option, then I would simply be the one choosing the vegetarian option. If they don't have a vegetarian option, then I would simply ask them, hey, can you remove the meat or can you substitute that meat with a little extra food or a little extra vegetables here and there? But not in any And I would do that. As we came home and we went grocery shopping, I would simply be sure that I had maybe an avocado extra or made sure that I bought mushrooms for every piece of meat that I bought for them, some kind of substitute for myself, so that when I make dinner for them, let's say if we're having a beef stroganoff, I'm having a mushroom stroganoff where I substitute the beef for my mushrooms. A little bit different cooking process, but the majority of the food being cooked will be cooked the same, cooked together, cooked alike. And then as time goes, and as I start feeling or have more time within my day to create the food that I need, because most of the time with the vegan alkalinism, biominerals lifestyle, you do have to make the food yourself. It's not something that's necessarily in the mainstream. It's going to have soy lecithin in it. It's going to have products in it that are not conducive to the health of the person. So that said, making noodles, making things of that nature, due to our domestic training, as it were, a lot of times are conceived as being a specialty, something that not everyone can do. And that was done by design in order to make people more palatable to buying their food rather than eating at home, as the traditions were back in the 1800s and 1700s before this industrial food era came along. What I've learned is that many times the idea of the process is actually harder than the process. The mental thoughts that go into the what ifs is actually what stops you, not the process. And then once you do it, you'll be like, oh man, this is so easy. I should have kept doing this. But then through habit or through comfort, we end up doing what is comfortable, what is societally comfortable. You know, we find ways to say that it's not possible, that I don't have time, I don't have the ability. And these are mental parts that you have to work on just as well as eliminating the foods that make you sick and the foods that you know do not agree with your system. It's just as important to rid yourself of the mental notes that you give yourself concerning these systems. So, example, when I first moved here to Hawaii, one, bread is very, very expensive. And it was mostly at that time kind of a monetary reason that I decided that I should just make bread. I used to make bread when I was a child and living in Costa Rica because they don't make Americanized style bread that I was accustomed to. They mostly make French bread baguettes, kind of a airier, you know, crispy on the outside, really fluffy on the inside, but not what I'm used to making my sandwich out of. So I looked into these recipe books, like old settlement recipe books, and a lot of times they asked for things that I couldn't find. Like they wanted lard, not something you just go out and buy so much anymore. I'm sure you can now, you know, certain places you can, but in Costa Rica, I didn't have the connection to just go get some lard, and the idea of cooking with straight up fat was not appealing to me. And it would ask for milk, it would ask for things that I didn't have access to. And my father used to always say that making bread, my own way of doing it, you know, a fear of failure, a fear of, hey, my elders have already tried this and they've come to the conclusion it's not possible. You have to do these and these certain steps. And then I allowed that knowledge that was given to me to limit my want and my thought and my creativity and give myself walls and corners and things of that nature that would just make it okay that I couldn't make it, make it okay that I hadn't tried. And when I brought it up, they, people would be like, oh yeah, it's true, you can't do it without it, which would then once again go deeper into that idea that I shouldn't have tried it. I shouldn't do that. So, but we got to this point in Costa Rica where we didn't have money. You know, we were selling clothes and stuff like that to pay our light bill. We were coming with whatever hustle we could come up with in order to make it day to day. And we had all the ingredients here. I went to the kitchen one day and we had flour, we had oil, but we didn't have butter, which a lot of time they call for lard or butter. We had no milk, but we did have yeast. And so I just went in there and I kind of looked at the recipes that I had found. Most of them, like I said, call for a butter shortening of some sort. They call for milk being scalded. They were very specific about how the yeast had to be risen and how it had to be done. And they gave you all the reasons why it couldn't be possible to do it any other way, that these things must be done precisely in this manner. But I had time and I had the want to kind of go a little further with it. So I grabbed water. I just put some oil that we had in there and mixed those together and was able, without those ingredients, to make a stunning bread that by all accounts should not have been able to be made. It should not have been able to be constructed. It should have failed. It shouldn't have risen. It should have all these different reasons. But when I actually executed it, it came 100% correct. It came out just as I imagined it, just as I thought it would be. And I was then kind of pushed to add some herbs to it. I was like, well, let me see what happens if you add herbs. And so I add a little salt and pepper to my mix and then added the flour and then added the yeast after adding the flour, after I'd got it to this mesh area. And I thought it very interesting that it was possible. Now we fast forward about 15, 20 years and I went to culinary school. And one of the principles we learned in culinary school is that you absolutely cannot season your flour mixture or your oil water mixture before adding yeast, because the idea that the salt would kill the yeast. But I argued with my chef that I had been doing that for years, that my base always included salt, pepper, oregano, and whatever seasonings I could find, that I've always kind of done it that way, and I have never had the yeast die. So I was curious, you know, as to what this philosophy came, where they're telling everybody in the class that you cannot season it like that. The only way to season your bread is to roll it afterwards, or to roll out your dough and add it and then mix it in, because otherwise you would kill the yeast's ability to rise. So, you know, I went round and round with my chef. He didn't agree. He kept telling me there's a science, just my dad, there's a science to making bread. It must be done one way, and this way has been proven and all this kind. So I made him a loaf. It was funny because he refused to watch me make it, but when he ate it, he absolutely loved it. And he talked about how light it was and it, and the texture of it, and that it still was a really great loaf of bread. And for that moment, I felt that I had broken through to him to understand that
This idea of status quo of behavior was something that was placed upon us to stop us from exploring in our own ways, and that we shouldn't really teach these kids. I was a student advocate, so I also just kind of a student teacher in my culinary class, that we shouldn't be teaching these incoming students limitations on their cuisine. You know, we should teach them the basic rules that we have observed, the basic rules that we have been seen in practice, but that it really isn't something that we should say is set in stone. And that goes with your diet. That goes with all the things that you've taught about food. Don't let them be set in stone. Don't act as though the formula that you've received or heard is the only formula possible. Experiment. See what happens. You know, and recently I found that pasta noodles are just the same. They're extremely easy to make. It's just that we have been trained that pasta is this delicate, delicate thing. And you watch these cooking shows and they talk about how the pasta must be rolled just perfect in order to have this feeling and this and the other. And that's meant to make it feel as though you need someone else to do it for you, that it's not something that you're able to do yourself. When the truth of the matter is, it really is simple. It's as simple as it looks. It's as simple as it sounds. And a lot of what they do is more complicated than it needs to be. I found the hardest thing that I've had is finding the thickness. What thickness do I like my noodles to be? You know, and that's as far as how much you roll them out. And, you know, they would express, oh, you need a press to make your noodles. You don't need a press. All the press is doing is applying an even pressure across the dough in order to make it thinner and evenly thinner. This can definitely be done by hand. This can definitely be something that you don't need that for. There's so many different consistencies of noodles. There's so many different consistencies of flours and stuff. The best thing I would suggest is simply try them. Find the flour you like that gives you that noodle texture you like. Rice flour tends to be a lighter fundamental flour than using, say, wheat, which you really probably shouldn't be using anyway with the alkaline diet. You can use amaranth, though I would say that amaranth has a very bitter taste to it until it's been sauteed, or not even sauteed, I guess the word would be roasted. Just take it and kind of brown it in the oven, let it cook a little bit, and the bitterness will go away. And then use that. One of my favorite, it's a gluten-free as well. One of my favorite to use, though, is something called kamut, K-A-M-U-T. It is not gluten-free. That's the only down part of it. But it is definitely approved on the alkaline diet. And it has a nice buttery taste to it, and a nice buttery, smooth, thick feel to it. And that'll give you more familiar pasta. So that's another thing you got to think about, is that when you're cooking, stop looking for familiarity. Stop trying to compare what you're eating to Barilla's or to, you know, how the pasta at the store is. You have to change your perception and find what actually tastes good, what is palatable to you. And don't stay stuck within the confines of what the grocery stores have offered you. They've only, like, if the world of pasta was a huge 180 degree scale, they literally only showed you the first 5 degrees. There's 75 degrees left of different types of pasta, different textures, different flavors, different consistencies that are not being presented, that are not being mainstreamed. And it's because those other ways may not necessarily be able to be done in a manufacturer's mass production way. And so the best way to do is to pretend as though that's the only way. The pasta isn't right if it's not made this way. And then you start to second guess yourself when you're like, oh, it didn't come out this way. Give yourself some room to experiment. Give yourself some room to find a new way of enjoying your food, or a new consistency. And or if you want to strive to make that pasta just like that, then do that. Make sure you do that. But don't stress yourself about it. Don't act as though the step's going to take you 5-6 hours to make pasta. It only takes maybe 30-40 minutes to make yourself some fresh pasta you want to use for dinner. And if you're doing it while you're cooking your dinner, it all kind of flows into a concert of movement that kind of all works together. So that being said, how do you start? Just start little at a time. Just start small parts at a time. And don't act as though you can make a mistake. Don't act as though, you know, oh, well, I tried to do this and it didn't come out exactly like I wanted it, so I failed. You didn't fail. You learned, you know, you learned that, hey, I don't like the pasta that thick. This mixture didn't work really well. maybe I should try a different way of doing this. And don't be scared to reach out to these communities. And I know a lot of times the communities, you get a lot of hateful, hurtful reactions to questions. Filter through them. You don't have to listen to everybody's opinion. You know, reach out to those that are open, that are willing to discuss, willing to work and help with you, and try to avoid those ones that get stuck in rules, saying that this is just the way it is. There's no moving around that. Like, if you're not on the SEBI list, then you're just not doing it. That is a good way to fail. The SEBI list is extremely restrictive. Extremely restrictive. And I don't say it in a bad way. But I also don't believe that it is a diet that is meant to be maintained 24/7. Even Dr. Sebi, if you look in some of his videos, and you can't nitpick through them, just watch all of them. There's one thing that he does say. He ate spinach, for example. He just knew it didn't have any real positive affect for his body. It was kind of like roughage just coming in and out of his body. But he did eat it. He did have teas that he shouldn't have, so-called, on the list. And since his death, there's been this rise in this community of, well, that's it. The list that he created from the day that he died is all there is to it. When he had said that list has been evolving for 50 years, there's stuff that he has taken off the list now that he would have recommended 30 years ago. And people were still being cured, even though he was offering things that now they're saying it's off the list. So be very careful of dogmatic, negative thoughts about what you're doing. Go and look about, what is the alkalinity of what you're going to eat? If you see a fruit, be like, oh, this calamansi, for example, I found, you know, is a kind of a sour orange lemon combination that grows here quite readily in Hawaii. It's an alkaline citrus fruit, you know, and it's not on the list. They have it as under a different name. There's different varieties of them, but if you look it up, it is an alkaline fruit. If you go and you look up the lilikoi, a lilikoi is an alkaline fruit. If you go and you look up different types of items you may find at the store, you may find interest. Just go on Google, say, is this an alkaline, and, you know, blank, insert the name of the fruit, alkaline or acidic. And it'll usually pop up, you know, not the first ones. You want to skip the 2-3 top ones that come out, because they're usually sponsored advertising of some sort. But look for, like, WebMD actually has a lot about the fruit and different things of that nature and their makeup and side effects and how they can be problematic or not problematic in use. And don't take anything as what they say, gospel. You need to create your own gospel. You need to create your own book of understanding, your own research. And that was one of the top things that Sebi said. Research, research, research. Always be aware of what you're eating. Always be aware of what you're taking in. All of that is very, very important. So it's your journey. It is your journey. And the things that you see out there, they're simply suggestions, helps, hints, ways to push you in a certain direction. But it is your journey. So don't beat yourself up. Don't become your own worst enemy as you go through this journey. Make sure that you are kind to yourself. Make sure you are forgiving to yourself. And as long as you are doing what you know you can do in order to be better, then do that. Take that choice of having an alkaline meal. But if for some reason you're somewhere and they're let's say they're having, you know, a friend made you this, I heard this a few times, a friend came, was trying to help them out. And so they invited them to their house and wanted to make them a vegetarian diet to the side, but they had things on it that weren't on the list, et cetera, et cetera. If these aren't things, if you're not deep into the diet, and these aren't things that cause you to create mucus on spot. Like for me, there's a lot of foods now, because I'm so alkaline, that if I eat them, I get congested within a few minutes. Like I'll start having a lot of mucus issues within a few minutes. Then I'll eat it, you know, out of you know, it's out of the good vibe, the good nature in which they gave it to me. And I'll do my best to have a positive mental mindset about it when I'm eating it. I don't think, oh, I'm eating poison. Oh, I'm doing this or I'm doing that. That is what makes you sick. That is what makes you ill. And it doesn't matter what you're eating. If you could be eating an all alkaline, fully SEBI diet, but if you're choking down every bite, that will make you sick. It will not make you feel well. It will not make you feel that energy boost that everybody's talking about, because it's the mental aspect that is just as important as the physical aspect of eating. So, like I said, start easy, start slow. Of maybe just, hey, I don't want any carrots. Can you remove the carrots from my food? That's one of the ones that I just don't go back on. I will not eat carrots. I will not eat broccoli. I will not eat cauliflower. And I make very sure that those things are not something I will consume. And it's really not that hard, even when you're going out to a vegetarian restaurant, to suggest it. Say, hey, could you please omit these particular items, or can you take these out? And many times they'll say, yeah, they could take it out, no problem. Other times you'll go and they say that they don't have the ability to change their menu. And in that case, you need to understand that that restaurant isn't making their food. 9 times out of 10, they're getting it prefabbed or frozen lumpias or whatever they may be. They're getting them in bulk frozen from some kind of commercial kitchen, which means that, you know, the quality of the food there isn't going to be something that you're you should be looking like, oh, I'm having a healthy meal. It would be the equivalent of going to the bar and having a few drinks. You're going to have some drinks. There's no point when alcohol is good for you. It's a poison. We all know it's a poison, but we still engage in it. And there's times when we'll engage in it and in our minds like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. And you'll get sick and it won't feel a good time. You won't have a good time. There's other times where your mind will just be on the moment and you'll be drinking with your friends and you'll have a great, great time. Did it poison you? Yes. Did it do harm to your system? Absolutely. But do we feel that way? No. Do we get that energy from it? No. Do you wake up and like in the middle of it, be like, oh, I'm po-? No, you don't think of it like that. You're just enjoying yourself. You might the next day, if you overdid it and you got that hangover, it reminds you, your body reminds you, hey, that wasn't something our body really should be doing. But that's not the case all the time. So like when I eat something that I know isn't, you know, on the list, isn't alkaline, bile mineralist approved, I look at it like I just had a shot of alcohol, you know, but I knew what I was doing and I'm not going to feel bad about it. I'm just going to move past that moment and try the next day, just like you get a hangover. Now I'm going to do all these things to fix my hangover. I'm going to be kind to myself. I'm going to drink a bunch of water. I'm going to, you know, make sure I have a good breakfast. The things people do, you know, that's what I'm going to do in the same way if I eat something that wasn't quite right with the diet, but I'm not going to beat myself up about it. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And you should avoid that mindset, because anytime that you are being self-belittling, it is in no way a positive thing for you. There's no way to make it good. And that's what we need to do. We need to make it good. We need to make your thoughts good, and your life will follow. So I hope this was helpful. If you have any questions or would like to talk to me directly, I do have a Facebook page, Fariel's Epicurean Delights. It is Fariel is spelled F like Frank, E-R-E-Y-E-L. Epicurean is E-P-I-C-U-R-E-A-N. And Delights is spelled normally. I would also push for you to look up Epicurious so you understand what the word Epicurean means. A lot of people misjudge what that is. It's about eating and living lavishly. And just look up Epicurious. And understand that there's so much you can do. But if you want to Google or look up on Facebook, the Fariel's Epicurean Delights, I have a lot of little recipes on there of different alkaline milks you can make, different ideas you can make, positive community attributes. But I would love to expand, and I would love to have conversations one-on-one. I'd love to get some groups together who want to experience the first stages of learning to cook, the first stages of learning to become your own self-advocate. We also have a retreat here in Oahu, Hawaii. If you would like to come and spend a week or two just kind of getting a jump start and have somebody be your advocate as you begin your journey, that's also available as well. You should contact me through my Facebook page if that's something you're interested in. Other than that, I really hope you well on your journey. Please stay educated, keep researching, stay positive with yourself and the people around you. Be well.